Welcome back to the GamecockScoop.com podcast, the official podcast of GamecockScoop.com on Rivals. I am Caleb, joined by Alan, as always. Let's get right into it.
There's no reason to wait.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch actually to catch up on from the last week that we'll get to after, but I just want to talk about what's going on tonight here in about, what,
5 hours?
6 hours? 5 hours? So I titled this episode, you titled a post, I sent a tweet after the Florida thing, and all three had one thing in common, which is that this is the biggest men's basketball game at home in Colonial Life Arena history. And now I think it's safe to say in South Carolina men's basketball history. As far as a home game, like obviously you had the Final Four game a few years back in, what was that, 2017. But I think home game, this one takes the cake. Winner will be in, well, not necessarily sole position in first place. If you beat Tennessee, you have the same record, but you've beat them twice this season. So you'd have the head-to-head, which would have you in position for the number one overall seed in the SEC tournament. If you lose, you could swing all the way down to fifth in the SEC standings because everything's still a little bit of a cluster. Let's start here because I grew up a South Carolina fan, unlike you. I've seen all of these, like, and pretty much every major sport except for women's basketball and baseball. So I guess mainly men's basketball and football. I've seen these moments where it was like, okay, you're right there, and if you make this happen, then you capture greatness. And it feels like one of these moments. And because I grew up a South Carolina fan, I'm putting my percentage chance that they win tonight at like 5%. Is that too low?
Yes, that's too low. But yes. All right. Let's set this up. I don't think we even said the South Carolina versus Tennessee tonight, 7 o'clock ESPN2. Let's get the facts out of the way. Like you said, you're one game behind Tennessee for the league lead right now with two to go. You are trying to win your second ever SEC regular season title. Your first one was in 1997, which you clinched on the road at Rupp Arena. And I guess you still clinch this one on the road, too, because you got to go to Starkville Saturday. But you can be in position to win a regular season title if you win tonight. All right. Let's probably get to the basketball. You're 5% there. It's going to be tough. It's a revenge game for Tennessee. Dalton Connect is playing in outer space right now. You held their shooters pretty well the last game.
Granted, he scored 31 points last time too.
Yeah. 40%. I think it's where I am right now. I think Tennessee is favored for good reason. They are probably going to be a one seed in the NCAA tournament for a reason. But I think at this point, kind of talk about it with some other people, the notion that this team can't win a game or that they have no chance to win a game. And I get what you're saying about the history and kind of where your brain lies with all this. I think I'm just past the point of doubting this team, and they can lose tonight and play really well. That's just kind of what Tennessee is. You can play really well and lose, but there's every chance this team could defend really well, keep the pace slowed down, get another big game from Michi Johnson. That's the other wild card. Michi Johnson didn't shoot well at Tennessee. Is that going to happen twice? And find a way to win this thing tonight.
Yeah, if I'm taking off my South Carolina fan hat, which I tend to do a lot more often than I used to now that we're in this more objective space about it, obviously. Sure. I think 40% sounds about right. I mean, look back at it, right? They went on the road to Tennessee earlier this season and beat the same team, even with Dalton Connect, like you said, going off, scoring 31 points. I think the strategy will probably be similar tonight as it was in that game, which was he's going to get his points. Just don't let anyone else hurt you in addition. And he scored literally half of their
last
points.
2 minutes. Yeah. 3 minutes.
But overall he scored literally half their points.
Yeah. He scored like half of those even within the last 2-3 minutes.
Right. But yeah, so the final score of that one on the road, South Carolina won 63 59, and yeah, Dalton Kanek scored 31, so more than half their points.
More than half, yeah.
And like you said, Michi Johnson wasn't really the hero in that one. You had 16 points from BJ Mack, who we can talk about here in a little bit. He had probably the worst game of his season this past weekend. Talon Cooper had 18, and Miles Studi had 13. And maybe that's a good transition too. What's the latest on whether or not Miles Studi will be available for tonight?
Yeah, and I think this is a really important piece of the game tonight, both for the shooting, what he can do to Tennessee's defense, and also the defense's length against some of those shooters besides Kanek. Lamont Paris told us yesterday he's going to give it a go. We did have a little piece of open practice yesterday where he was shooting. He was going around. He still had a brace on that left knee, but he – it's one of those things where we talk about a lot during football season, especially, but like everybody's banged up at this time of year. Everybody's got some injuries. It's March. They've been playing since October, November. How is Miles Studi 80%? Is he 30%, but he's not going to miss this one? It's kind of, I expect him to play tonight. I think he's going to be out there. I am not fully sure what out there means, but I will say too, that ironically, it was that trip to Knoxville in January. He was coming off the first knee injury where he had missed, I think it was three games at that time, and he was questionable coming into that one. And he comes in, scores 13 off the bench, defends really well, ices the game with the free throw line. So I think you can still get something out of Miles tonight, and I also think you're going to need it too against this team.
Yeah, honestly, I think if you could just get a few minutes off the bench and a couple of good looks from three, that would go a long way tonight. Because you are, I mean, one thing that we maybe haven't talked enough about is Tennessee is also really good on defense. This is, I mean, there's a reason that it was a, 63-59 game. Yeah. You are going to have to control the pace a little better than you did really in the last two games. So, I mean, obviously you won out on the road against Texas A&M. You won a big game at home against Florida, which we can talk a little more about because we haven't talked about it on the podcast. But both of those, I felt like you kind of let the opponent get you out of your pace and speed you up a little bit. Luckily you were able to keep it going. A lot of that is Michi Johnson, like you said, kind of emerging the last couple of games and getting hot at the right time. Colin Murray Boyles continuing. He had his first double-double of his career on Saturday. I think all of that's going to have to click into place, and you're going to have to do a little bit better job of controlling the pace than you have the last two games.
Yeah, and I think the point from the Texas A&M game and the Florida game is both those games, second half against A&M, first half against Florida, you had one lengthy run where you just couldn't buy a bucket. I think both cases, ironically, ended up being a 17-1 run for the opponent. You pulled it back against A&M late. Florida, you get down double digits. You pull that one back. I'm not going to say you can't win the game tonight if you fall down by 10. That would be silly, but obviously it's a much, much bigger uphill climb against a team like Tennessee. And the way Tennessee shoots the ball, the way they can score in bunches, like you said, the way Kanek can heat up quickly. Yeah, 5 minutes where you don't hit a bucket can cost you a game tonight, even if those are 5 minutes in the first half. And I think that just kind of goes to the point about the pace, too. You got to be able to control this. You got to keep them from going on a run. You got to – I don't even want to say stay in it long because that implies that they're this 16 seed against the one, and you got to just keep the hope alive. Like, I don't want to do that. But I think Tennessee is capable of knocking out not just you, anybody quickly – with a punch. And that's something I think at least to be cautious of after the last two games, you've given up these extended runs.
No. And I mean, I think it's fair when you look at the top 25 matchups on the season for South Carolina, the ones that have gone well are ones that you just kind of fought, hung around. Things were close at halftime. You generally weren't blowing anyone out. The Alabama and Auburn matchups were ones where you went through that stretch that you mentioned and never really recovered from it. So, I mean, I guess the Alabama one's a little bit different because I think you were leading that game weirdly, but the second half just totally fell apart. But Auburn.
But it's still one of those stretches. Like,
totally.
That is, I think, a 1-point game with a half in Tuscaloosa and you end up losing by 30 or whatever because you have a stretch, 5-6 minutes where you don't hit a bucket. And that's really all it takes.
Now, when we think about this Tennessee team and kind of the season that they've had, you look back at their schedule and South Carolina was actually the last team. Texas A&M also beat them like a week later. But since then, they are however many games it's been since then. They in that stretch, they've beaten Kentucky. They've beaten Alabama, they've beaten Auburn. Do you think Tennessee's kind of playing a little better brand of basketball than they were back in that January 30th date?
Yeah, I do. I don't want to say South Carolina caught them off guard or didn't have their attention in January, but I definitely think with what's at stake tonight, with what happened, I guess, 6 weeks ago now, you're going to have Tennessee's attention tonight. I don't know if they're playing better, but I do think the defense is still carrying right now. I mean, you look at the stretch, gave up, 63 to Arkansas, 53 to Vandy, 67 to Mizzou, 51 to A&M. I mean, those aren't great teams, but still 50s, 60s. And you know what the offense can do, what it's capable of. And I think you hit it earlier, but just kind of looking at that game in Knoxville in January, I think your three guys aside from Connect, Ziegler, James, and Adu, kind of the other three shooters. Adu 2 for 8, Ziegler 0 for 6, and Vescovi. I just said the other four starters. How about that? The other four starters, 2 for 8, 0 for 6, 4 for 7, 1 for 3. I mean, if you stack that up, that's, what is that? I can do math. That's 7 for 23 from the floor. Like, you held Tennessee's four other starters to 7 total made field goals. Can you do that again? I don't know, but I think that's kind of the way this is going to have to look.
Yeah, and again, if I'm looking back at that January game, another stat that stands out to me immediately, 10 made three-pointers versus Tennessee's 5. I think you're going to need a similar story again tonight where you make your open shots when they're available. Probably are going to have to make more than Tennessee does. South Carolina throughout the season really has done a really good job of pressuring guards not named Dalton Connect, and maybe a little bit
Murrell at Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss the first time at least. But I mean, those are two guys that are going to be playing in the NBA, so not the worst thing ever. If you can kind of hold the other guards in check and limit the runs that Connect goes on, I mean, I think he's pretty much penciled in for 20 plus points no matter what. But kind of limit that and make some threes of your own, then I don't see any reason why you're not right there. And especially if you're riding that home crowd, which I think is going to play a big factor, played a big factor on Saturday.
Yeah, the other angle of this too, BJ Mack played very well against Tennessee. You talked about his struggles Saturday against Florida. That was kind of before you had Colin Murray-Boyles rolling. He was playing. He played 20 minutes. He started that game, but he had 4 points. I don't want to say a non-factor because he was a big part of that defense, but he definitely wasn't the offensive factor that he kind of became those next few weeks. Really, that, I think it was that next game at Georgia, he scored his first double figures or scored his career high and didn't look back. You have another offensive weapon you can kind of counter Tennessee with that you didn't have in that January game. And I think it does kind of play into a guard-heavy Tennessee team, and you can kind of do more inside than maybe you could in that first game.
Yeah, that's something that I guess we haven't really considered, but they ran 4 guards and a forward for most of that game last time. And I would expect that again, cause they're trying to, speed up the pace and get the offense rolling and get a little bit. I think Colin Murray-Boyles can be a big time X factor in this one. That might've only been a couple of games after he had come back from mono. I don't think he was fully up to speed. Definitely didn't have the level of confidence I think that he has now. I expect him to play a factor tonight. Like I said, he's coming off his first career double-double, one of the better games of his career just last week.
Yeah, and then even you just look down the bigs too. Josh Gray didn't put up monster numbers, but he was a big part of that game in January. He had 6 and 7. I kind of think that's where you have the edge in this game, right? I mean, definitely – you always kind of look at games like, all right, who's got the best individual player on the floor? That's probably Tennessee. What's the crowd factor? That's definitely South Carolina. The depth situation's probably about even. Both teams, play 8, 9 guys regularly. South Carolina can get up to 10 sometimes, but usually about 9. Backcourt, if you get a good Michi Johnson shooting game, I think you can tip that close. Cooper's playing very well right now, obviously, too. Had a big game Saturday against Florida, but front court, I think you have the edge. I think you like your chances better on the glass. I think you feel good about what you did in the front court in that game in Knoxville. And that was, again, without much of a Colin Murray-Boyles factor. Definitely, even if nothing else, he's going to play more than 20 minutes tonight, which is all you can do in that first Tennessee game.
Yeah. So that one's tonight at 7 p.m. I assume most of you are going to be there in person, or you should be. By the way, I see a lot of you out there watching. If you have any questions or comments or whatever, you can leave them wherever you're watching, and we should see them and be able to address those. All right. So we think that they have an advantage on the interior. We think that they've proven at least once this season that they can kind of slow Tennessee down, limit scoring opportunities from people not named Connect. Any other, I guess, factors where South Carolina, you know, you're looking at the stat sheet at the end of the night and you're like, oh, of course they won.
I think you got to keep it. I don't want to say, obviously, it's not going to be zero, but you talk about pace and avoiding those runs and transition. You had 10 turnovers in the first Tennessee game. That's not a lot over 40 minutes by any means, but I think that's about where you need to keep it. Because Tennessee doesn't turn the ball over very much. They only had six in that that game in Knoxville in January. I think if – I'm not going to put a number on it, but you got to be close to even and probably in single digits in turnovers.
Yeah, that was something that stood out to me too, because while 10 is not a ton, that is one of the higher outputs of the season. Something strategy-wise that South Carolina has done a really good job about is protecting the ball, running the shot clock, and then taking a good look so that teams do have trouble getting a lot of quick points in transition. And yeah, I was actually kind of shocked to see that they lost that turnover battle and still kind of controlled the pace the way that they did.
Yep. I think you look at not the Florida game, but the A&M game, you had, I think it was eight turnovers in the first half, only one in the second half. That's kind of about what it's going to be, or what I think it's going to need to be. You need to take care of the ball to have a chance tonight.
All right. Well, we're very excited to see how all that plays out. You can come check us out on GamecockScoop.com. We already have a couple of pregame articles kind of previewing even further than we just now did. And we'll have a live thread. If baseball runs over, we'll still have a live thread. I assume most people will be switching their televisions if baseball runs over. I guess really quickly, let's transition into a little bit of baseball talk. Unless you had anything else you wanted to say about
tonight. No, I think we hit all the points on the men's game. We'll be around tonight. We'll have story coverage, Lamont post game, all that stuff. Keep it locked on Gamecock Scoop.
So obviously, we've hit on an early season problem with the baseball team, and that is their ability to drive in runners in scoring position. We saw that bite them in the butt several times this weekend. They lost two games to Clemson. Both 5-4. The Saturday game went into 12 innings after some ninth inning heroics tied it up and kind of pushed it. Let's start there, I guess. Like, is that just a luck thing? Eventually that's going to start to fall in your direction? Or is that something that we should be legitimately concerned about at this point?
I always go back and forth on stuff like this because it is still early. I think there's cause for concern with this offense. I don't want to say you're not as deep as you thought, but maybe you're not getting what you thought with some guys. You felt good about Parker Nolan, the Vanderbilt transfer coming in. He has not had a good start to the year at all. Kennedy Jones, a little bit of a slower start than you were expecting, maybe. Cole Messina for sure. And you know that guy's got the track record. You know he's been here these last 2 years, what he can do. But right now he's off to a – I mean, there's no way around it. He was, I think, 1-for-9 in the Clemson series and 2-for-11 in the Belmont series the weekend before that.
Of those names, though, I worry about him the least. I do think that's going to be one of those things that law of averages works out eventually.
Yeah, and I think it's just kind of you got to – I think they're still very much in experimenting mode. You saw a bit of a different lineup yesterday. Brewer hitting leadoff, Lee Croy second. They mixed it up again today. You got Lee Ellis, the freshman, in there for Parker Nolan. Maybe you find something there at second base. I think you just got to just keep juggling it till you find something that sticks. You got a week and a half till SEC play now. And I don't want to act like your season's over and you got to burn down the program and you got to throw Mark Kingston in the river or anything like that after 2-1 run losses to Clemson. I know y'all want to do that. I'm not doing that. Clemson lost this series last year and finished number 4 in the country. I think it's worth remembering, but you did lose a series. That's going to hurt your non-con resume when you're looking at trying to host or whatever. That was your big chance to impress the committee outside the SEC, and you didn't win the series. And you're going to have to sit on that for a while now because you got midweeks, you got Longwood this weekend, but you don't have a chance to really play someone and kind of get that swagger back to SEC play next weekend. So you got to sit on this one for a little bit.
I agree with what you said about Kingston and, you know, not necessarily burning it down, whatever. But I will say – as someone that's been following the program for a little bit, some of the quotes coming out of that game, I don't think are going to land with the fan base the way that maybe he would want.
I wanted to get to that too. Go ahead. Say what you want. No, you go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was basically just this idea of like, well, we were both really, really good and it just didn't fall our way. I think there's some truth to that, but I also think, what are we, 6 years in at this
seven.
Point?
Well, seven technically, but six season because COVID. But
right. So 7 years in, that's not going to work anymore. Like we've gone through this several times now where there are some legitimate excuses, some legitimate near misses, all of these sorts of things. But at a program like this, eventually that doesn't fly. And I think that runway is gone at this point, 7 years in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also think too, I think the two comments that really got people up was Saturday after the game. He said they were one swing better than us. And I think Sunday it was, you saw two top 10 teams play 2 1-run games. We ended up short on both of them.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. So the Sunday one after they lose the series. I think there's merit to the idea of that. I think there's a merit to staying calm the first weekend in March when you're going to be trying to play until June. But this idea that you were close to good enough, especially in a rivalry series, which that's a whole separate point, but you can lose SEC games 5-4. You can lose to really good SEC teams by a run. And if you end the year under 500 in the league, but you got a bunch of one-run losses, I don't think anyone's going to care or say you were close or the schedule was tough or I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I happen to think Clemson's pretty good. Like, I think that top 10 rating justified, but you're facing a lot of top 10 teams this year. And if the level or the, I guess, ceiling for this team is just below really good, what does that mean? Or I guess, what are you doing here?
Yeah, a bunch of close losses to top 10 teams this year means that you're going to be on the outside looking into the postseason. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I believe you started off your weekend wrap with horseshoes and hand grenades, but not baseball.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how how I felt coming out of it, that there's things you can take for sure. We didn't even mention Garrett Gainey, but that reliever faced 12 batters, got 11 of them out in extra innings against Clemson. Took the loss because he gave up the walk-off homer, but he was stellar. I think he found something there. There's positives here, and there's not reason to burn down the season, but I'm with you that at a certain point, you got to start winning games.
Yeah, I feel like I actually just went a little bit more negative than I even feel, but I think part of that is, it's the quotes and it's the frustration or whatever, but there are some bright points, and I think the pitching looked pretty good throughout the season, throughout the series. Sunday was kind of a freak thing. This has been the frustrating thing throughout the Kingston era. The excuses are legitimate. Like they're usually not completely out of nowhere, but because I thought that South Carolina played better than Clemson on Sunday outside of a 4-inning stretch where they got two unearned runs, and that ended up being basically the difference. But also, there are opportunities to win despite that. You went 2-for-10 with the runners in scoring position throughout that game. So it's like, yes, I can see the one swing of a bat comment. Yes, I can see we were this close. But at some point, you got to get over the edge, and you had your opportunities to get over the edge throughout the weekend and just never did.
Yeah, and I think that's probably about where you leave it right now. Like I said, you're going to play these midweeks, which you already won one of them yesterday. You're going to play Longwood this weekend. You're just going to kind of have to, you know, they've said they've moved on. They've already flushed Clemson series. Okay, obviously they have to say that. They being Kingston and I think Talmadge LeCroy yesterday at the podium. You don't really have another chance until SEC play to kind of show you're different. And at that point, it's pedal to the metal, you know, weekend series, that 30-game conference grind that starts next week. You can't say the runway's short in March. Like, I mean, for the big picture of the Kingston era, like, yeah, okay, but for this season, it's March. It's week 4 of a 14-week season. But yeah, I think you're cause for concern, cause for eyebrow raising, and whether it means your year's over or doesn't, but like that series loss isn't going to help anything when you're trying to look at a hosting resume or a postseason resume. Like, it's one you had last year that you won't have this year.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and like you said, the narrative could be very different about a month from now. You win a couple of these early SEC series. Maybe you reschedule the Clemson game for a midweek, get one of those back. Things start to feel a lot better. And I do think that the bones of this team still have a postseason feel to them. But you're going to need some clutch hitting. You're going to need the law of averages to work out for Cole Masina and Gavin Casas, who are both hitting way under their career average right now. You're going to need those near misses on the mound to sort of stabilize out. So I meant to bring this up, but on Sunday, so you had Askew start that game, pitch very well, although he gave up a solo home run. And that was the only hit he had given up through the first three innings, which was kind of crazy. And then he gave up those two unearned ones, but they were kind of on him. It was a tough throw that he was going to have to make across his body off of a grounder. But hey, at the end of the day, it was scored an error. So anyway, and then you had Roman Kimball come in, who also was pitching excellent, but gave up two solo home runs. And those were the only two hits he gave up to that point as well. So I don't, Clemson did their damage on very – it was basically the opposite, right? Like they took advantage of every single tiny sliver of opportunity that South Carolina gave them, whereas I think South Carolina had a lot more opportunities that they just did not take advantage of.
Yeah, and I think that's – if you're still trying to find the hope here or you want to feel good about this, you're getting guys on base. You still lead the country in walks drawn. You're getting opportunities and – telling people to just sit around and hope it's going to even out doesn't make anybody happy. But it also, it's kind of what you have to do, at least till the SEC game start and you have a little bit more of a sample size.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. And we will have simultaneous live threads tonight as South Carolina has their midweek against Davidson. If there's any overlap there, we'll make sure we get all that info for you. Even if you flip over to the men's basketball game, we'll have a post-game story for you to read. See what happened over there.
When Mark Kingston got ejected the night the women were playing in the Final Four, like half an hour before tip at Mississippi State. I wonder if Kingston might toss some balls and strikes in there today just because he wants to watch it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Don't. Nobody clip that. I thought that was a funny coincidence last year, but.
You know, I wouldn't blame them. Or maybe the team will be motivated to try to end it in seven tonight so they can get home and watch it on TV or get to Colonial Life. Speaking of Colonial Life, let's talk a little bit of women right here before we wrap up. So undefeated regular season. It wasn't maybe quite as easy as we thought it would be. South Carolina ends up winning 76-68 against a 17-12 Tennessee team. But you go wire to wire. You win every game that was put in front of you. Definitely not something that we predicted at the beginning of the season with all of the unknowns coming off of that roster that, you know, had dominated women's basketball for 4 years. And I don't know, what else is there to say? Excellent work by Don Staley. Excellent work by this young team figuring out how to win a different way. It's definitely been a different brand of basketball this year and it's working.
Yeah. I think that's kind of almost where I leave it. Has this, not just for South Carolina fans, I think we've had that discussion kind of around the regular season title and the accomplishments of this team. Has this become too normal nationally? Cause I feel like I saw someone, I'll give her credit, Cora Hall from Knoxville News, who was there Sunday covering Tennessee, said, man, there's not a single national media member here as this team's trying to go back-to-back undefeated after losing all five starters. They only had one player on the first team All-SEC, which feels kind of hard for me to get my head around when they went undefeated in the conference. Is this becoming too normal nationally? Like, is the collective society taking for granted what this team has accomplished? And I get it. They're going to be judged on national title or not. I know how this works. 29-0 when you lost all five starters, when not just five starters, but the number one overall pick the WNBA draft, five players to the league total in 1 year. You replaced it. You supplemented in the portal. Tahina Pau-Pau, who's coming back next year, she announced that's a huge addition for next year already, playing out her COVID year of eligibility next season. Is this just normal now? Like, is I don't know. It felt very kind of off to me.
I mean, I think yes is the short answer to that. I mean, you check out like the women's basketball subreddit or a place where just fans hang out, right? Not even talking about the media narrative. It doesn't come up very often. People don't care, right? I guess this is kind of true for every sport. If you have a dynasty going, if it's your team, great, but no one else really cares. Like it gets to the point where you kind of just want to see the dynasty end, or someone, you know, David knock off Goliath, whatever. Especially if you're like a casual fan and don't recognize just how different this team is and how big of an accomplishment it is. If you've just been kind of paying attention to the overall narrative, it's like, okay, well, fifth year in a row, this team's really good. Got it.
Yeah.
But obviously us on the interior and that have been kind of paying a little closer attention, to me, this is one of Don Staley's most impressive coaching jobs thus far.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I think there's also a very real point of the methodical excellence and consistency this team plays with. The get in, show up, do your work. We're going to have five players score over 13 points. That's what happened Sunday. Just get out of here with a win. It's not the flashy. It's not Caitlin Clark from the logo. Maybe it's not, you know, maybe some of those UConn teams with, you know, Breonna Stewart or Diana Taurasi or whoever, a Tennessee team with a Candace Parker. I don't feel like there's a recognizable superstar on this team. I think they just kind of roll all 10 players they have right now. Anybody can beat you on any given night. They're pretty fundamentally sound most of the time. Got some of the turnover issues cleaned up from non-conference play. They just kind of do what they do better than the opponents most days. I think it's easy to take that for granted when it's not on SportsCenter or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is you mentioned like the dominant player that kind of grabs the headlines. I actually do think that there are those people on this team. They just aren't asked to do that. I think that there are shooters on this team that would put up 30, 40 points a game if that's what was asked of them. But it's just, you know, a lot more balanced than that, which is a luxury for sure. But it's also something that you have to give Don credit for as well. I mean, she's put together an excellent squad that continues to reload instead of rebuild. Just a quick look ahead. So the SEC women's basketball tournament starts today. Georgia and Kentucky are the 13-14 seed, Missouri and Florida, the 14-11 game. That actually may be going on right
now. It's going on now, yeah. I don't know what the score is, but Kentucky already beat Georgia this afternoon.
And South Carolina won't play until Friday at noon. And they're playing the game three winner, which is between Texas A&M and Mississippi State. And that is tomorrow, if you want to kind of do some scouting or whatever. That's in Greenville. So people that live in South Carolina, go check it out. Always fun. And I mean, at this point, keep the train rolling, right? I have to imagine at this point, now that you've made it through the whole regular season, you're eyeing a perfect season.
Yeah, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world or a catastrophe if you dropped a game this weekend. I think you go back to 2022 when you lost that SEC championship game and then ended up winning the national title. No one's trying to lose this weekend. No one's saying losing this weekend's a good thing. I don't know, if you ended up matching up with Tennessee again on that semifinal Saturday, you had to play them a third time in 3 weeks. That could be tough. LSU again, lurks in the title game, maybe. It's an interesting test. I think you're definitely locked into the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. So it's, you're trying to hang another banner, cut down another net, get a little bit of postseason experience. But I think, honestly, sound dumb to even say this, the main priority is to get out of this weekend healthy in one piece, take your week off, and then go ready to attack the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think still weirdly, I mean, you just look back at the last game, even though they are undefeated, it hasn't felt like they've been quite as dominant as last year. It hasn't felt like quite the same inevitability. So I do hear you on the, like, maybe losing a game this weekend gets you refocused and ready to go before the NCAA tournament. I still think that there has to be at least part of, maybe they're not talking about it, I'm sure they're not talking about it, but part of Don Staley, part of this team, especially anyone that's been around for a minute, that wants that perfect season. I mean, there's only been 9 perfect women's basketball seasons ever, and South Carolina is not on that list, despite how dominant they've been through this run. You have, you know, a couple Tennessee teams, a bunch of UConn teams,
sure,
but South Carolina hasn't been able to put one of those together yet. The last one, in general, was in 2015-16. UConn went 38-0, but I don't know. I bet it's somewhere on a goals list somewhere, yeah. In Don Staley's house.
There's not a lot of boxes they haven't checked yet. And that would be for sure be one of them. And that, again, if you want to look at it that way, I think that's fair. That starts this weekend, trying to win three games in 3 days this weekend in Greenville.
Yeah, definitely. We will have full coverage for those. Alan's going to drive up to Greenville for a couple of those, and we'll soon see what's going to happen with the men. Like we said, there's a pretty big swing that could happen tonight. You win, you are pretty well set up. You're pretty much definitely set up to be a top four.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not actually, just because of how
I got to run some math after tonight. Yeah. Either way.
But either way, you're sitting in first place. You have the number one seed as long as you beat Mississippi State if you win tonight. But if you lose tonight, you're sitting at fifth, and then you need to beat Mississippi State and hope for some weird stuff to happen this weekend to kind of inch your way back into that top four and get that first round bye. So kind of crazy that that's what it's coming down to this last weekend of the season. But also that's why there are, what, 9-8 SEC teams that are potentially going to make the NCAA tournament at this point. So
it's a deep league, and I think that just, and I wrote a little bit about this. If you're subscribed, you can check the website. I think it just speaks to how, A, what an accomplishment it is, and B, how kind of crazy it is that we're sitting here. Today's game 17 out of 18 in the league, and they control their own destiny to win the title with how deep the conference is this year and how much it takes to actually win a title over the course of a season in this league.
Yeah. The only other updates, there's a couple of recruiting notes that I will have this weekend in the weekly recruiting wrap-up. A couple off the top of my head are just that Furry, the new wide receivers coach, has reoffered several guys, including Jaden Sellers, who of course is your 2025 wide receiver commitment, brother of Lenora Sellers. I saw Malik Clark. I saw a few other wide receiver names, pretty much everyone, or all the big names that you were in it with and had some momentum with got reoffered. So nothing huge there. And then just more visits. Spring practice starts in 2 weeks. There'll be a lot of visits as that all gets going. So in the meantime, check us out on GamecockScoop.com. We'll have full coverage of tonight's game, stuff all weekend, stuff all throughout March. It's a crazy, crazy time, a really, really fun time. Also, if you don't follow us on Instagram, we're at Rivals Gamecock, and we have a giveaway going live very, 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 very soon. For a free year subscription to GamecockScoop.com. That's $100 value. So definitely go check us out on Instagram, see how you can enter that. And we'll be back in a week to talk a lot of stuff. It's going to
just talk about everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are going to continue to get crazy. This has been the GamecockScoop.com podcast. We'll see you.